Hey everyone, Madonna Guy here from The Natural Alternative. I wanted to share the following video. It is straight from the audience of a biodynamic conference here in Australia a week or two ago. It's currently still June 2024. I think that's important to know how far along some of these technologies for synthetic, sustainable, ecological, nutritional food are. This is all pretty disgusting, but it's good to know what's going on in our food supply so that hopefully we can have the knowledge to start fighting back. Okay, enjoy.
About a few things. I've got a lot of slides because I basically, when I speak, I show what is happening through source documents. So it's not my opinion. You can get to see the landscape we're in with synthetic biology and synthetic food. And I'm breaking this down in terms of looking first at the technologies they're talking about, including the food, plus also the tracking and tracing components to the food systems that are coming in. Who some of the big players are. There's a huge amount of players in the field. And then I go on and talk about the patented aspect of what's happening. So with it, as food becomes increasingly patented, what are the concerns there, the health aspects? So I do just flip through the slides really, really quickly just to pull out certain parts from documents. And most of it is CSIRO or United Nations or World Economic Forum documents. So you get to see how this is being talked about from global down to Australia and where it's coming into also state plans. So that's what I'm going to look at. And the reason I'm looking at it is because I don't remember how I came across the synthetic food transformation. I came across it a year or two ago, and I became incredibly alarmed at the scope of it, plus the ramifications for us as consumers of food, or for people who want to grow food, and where this is potentially going to lead, based on the track records of some of the main actors in the global arena who are behind a lot of this. So then I've looked at also the regenerative, how they're using regenerative now, and the wording and how it's changing. So there's not enough people speaking about it in the Australia. I'm just not hearing many people speak about it. So I think I want to show how it's shown as a kind of glossy sort of facade, and then what's actually underneath it. So people, especially in this space, biodynamic space, can be aware if they're comfortable or not with this approach that's coming into our food systems. It says traditional agriculture relies on land, water, and a suitable climate. In the future, foods could be manufactured anywhere in labs and indoor vertical farms. This could fundamentally reshape the agricultural sector, international trade and migration, as well as people's relationship with land, animals, and food. That's Policy Horizons, the arm of the Canadian government. And the picture to the left is the technology called CRISPR, which is the gene editing tool that's being used. And on the right is precision fermentation, which I'll talk about further. So the key initiatives, biotech, so it's all biology and technology smooshed together. It's the implanting tech in biology, implanting biology in tech, and synthetic futures. So that's all right, I'm all right here. So this is the CSIRO, a national synthetic biology roadmap that came out in the last 2 years. And so I just want to show you different papers. So if you're interested, you can go and have a better look. So I won't go through huge amounts of them, but you've got sustainable alternatives to animal proteins. So that says these new core plant proteins. And agricultural chemicals, engineered biosensors for biosecurity. So it's all about biosecurity and surveillance of crops, engineered crops and biological treatments for increased resilience, and they improve the nutrition. So I'm going to talk about what that is. 2019, a form of CRISPRing, which is the cutting of the genetic material, the genetic code, was allowed into the market. So it's unregulated in Australia from 2019. So that went through. I didn't know about it at the time, and he found out about that a year or so, a couple of years ago. So gene editing means scientists can much more precisely target, cut, delete, and edit parts of the genome they want to change. So you just cut something out, or you edit it. This is SDN1 was allowed into the market. That's where they cut something out, but then they let the gene grow back naturally. So they don't implant something in. But they do implant things in, but I think that's still regulated at this point. So the first, and all this CRISPR has been talked about in human bodies as well, genetically altering the human body. So that one of the things they do, this is the first thing, the mushroom, so it won't brown anymore. So they cut out whatever that part of the genetic code would be that would make it brown. One of the concerns, this is in the ABC article, is that with CRISPR is there's unpredictable effects, and that's where regulation supposedly can affect both research. And so there's unpredictable effects of this new technology. It's not that new, but it's new in terms of really being out there in our food. There are ways to improve the carbon. So you know how we're hearing lots and lots about carbon storage and plants and how they can, you know, pull down carbon and the soil. This is, they're talking about synthetic biology to be able to do that. So CRISPRing the root system of plants to be able to draw down more carbon. So these improvements in agriculture are possible because in synthetic biology, scientists typically stitch together long stretches of DNA and implant them into an organism's genome. So this is, it's why is synthetic biology in agriculture beneficial. So it's, you'll keep hearing about how this is the way we need to go for the climate and for the future. The first lab meat is just about to be allowed into the market in Australia. It's a lab quail. So you get a cell, you get a cell line from a quail, and then you somehow make it keep reproducing itself, which is technically a precancerous state because cells don't normally just keep dividing like that. And then that is just about to be allowed on the market. They're going to have to, it's the FSANZ, the food standards body, they're going to have to put out another public consultation around it. I read the last one that they put out, so this, that'd be the second. I put in a submission for the first. How Vow is the organisation who's doing the lab meat. When they do their literature search to say how safe is it, they're comparing it to real quail, because there is no lab meat that they can. There is no lab quail that's been tested on the market that they can actually compare it to. So they this is. Then they compare, because they put synthetic vitamins and minerals and everything into it, they compare those levels with the real natural vitamins and minerals in quail, as though they're the same thing. There was 30, so I've got this on, I have a Substack, it's Kate Mason Substack, and I have three or four articles on this lab meat that's coming in. There's 30 different reports they put in that we can't see as people because it's commercial confidential information. So you actually can't see what's the medium they use. So the medium they use to grow the cells is a barley that has a pig gene in it. But you can't see anything more than that because it's all confidential commercial information. So you can't see all the safety reports and see it for yourself. So we're expected to put, you know, our input into it, but we're not allowed to actually see how it works because it's all commercial. So then the CSIRO's got the edible insects framework. So that's, you know, as we go along, we're expected to eat more and more insects for protein. And there are health concerns around eating insects. An AI-powered facility, the largest, I think, in the world. So it's all artificial intelligence, robotics to make, I think it's crickets. The food. So yeah. Everything's like AI and in laboratories and in factories. Precision Fermentation, the startup that makes milk without cows, and in a process similar to how baker's yeast produces carbon dioxide to make bread rise, Perfect Day's yeast, so they get a yeast, they genetically engineer they genetically engineer a code into the yeast, and that yeast then pumps out milk-like products and cheese-like products and eggs. Egg-like products. It's, even though it's completely synthetic, it's not GMO. It's called GMO-free. Same with the lab meat. It's called GMO-free. So this is Cauldron. They're in Australia, and they're getting a lot of partnerships with the government, this Cauldron group, to do the precision fermentation. $10.5 million deal. So we have very, very, very big players in the field. $10.5 million funding round Hong Kong's Horizon Ventures has invested in Cauldron alongside Main Sequence. Main Sequence is the investing arm of the CSIRO. As a, going back to the Vow Food, they are funded by it's all venture capitalists. So they're funded by Blackbird, and Blackbird is the ex-CEO of the CSIRO, and his partner, I think it's Barty, someone Barty, he partnered with the CSIRO to make Main Sequence. So in this synthetic biology, there is a lot of CSIRO people, or were people. The CSIRO CEO, I think it was like 2018, he sacked a lot of climate scientists at the CSIRO and said, the science is settled, we just need to go to mitigation. So climate mitigation strategies are synthetic food. It's synthetic. It's an advanced level of very problematic technologies in my mind. So then we've got the 3D printed food. So you have a 3D printer in your home. This is what they're talking about. And then you have all these dots of ink are deposited on a surface, and then you can build a three-dimensional object. So it can look like something, you know, like a burger or something with just ink and these synthetic components put in from your own home. So they talk about it helping cut food waste. So when they're talking about sustainable, it's really important to understand what they mean. So when they talk about sustainable food here, they're talking about using really old food that you would normally get rid of that wouldn't have much nutrition at all in it to be able to repurpose it and put it through, you know, into some sort of liquid form to be able to make use of. And then they talk about it being nutrient boosted because you can put artificial vitamins and minerals in it and customize it to your personal health needs. And they're saying it will become a common kitchen appliance. So this isn't just one person, this is BBC, but this isn't just one. Like this is the realm when you start to look at what the biotech people are saying. And they have massive, they're getting a lot of fun, they're putting a lot of funding in, and they're getting a lot of partnerships with government. So it's not like a sideline, oh, it doesn't matter, it won't happen. So then we've got the drones. So drone, you know, this has been talked about for a while. So you get your deliveries in drone. So I imagine you get your packet of synthetic, you know, goo dropped off with your drone. So Woolworths in the Central Coast is about to sort of start doing it.
Oh my
And
God.
you've got Amazon in West Gosford, and they've been involved in this drone drop-off of groceries for a while. Okay, so this is the Mackay Future Foods Biohub in Queensland. This is the government plan. Global food security relies on the development and delivery of new biotech to increase food production. And they're going to establish a future foods biohub in Mackay. And this is part of a food and agribusiness revolution. So you'll hear that word, transformation revolution. They're going to use advanced biomanufacturing to create plant-based alternatives, precision fermentation. You know, that's what it looks like. That's how food's made in big factories and vats. I just wanted to point out with this one, we have a protein expression. I can't read what it is, but there's so many actors in the field. There are so many different groups that are set up. Australia's leading protein research facility specializing in recombinant protein production, so for food. So I'll explain what that means. The DNA molecules are DNA molecules formed by laboratory methods of genetic recombination, such as cloning, that brings together genetic material from multiple sources, creating sequences that would not otherwise be found in the genome. So you're putting a lot of species together as well. You know, this strand from here and that strand from that animal and putting them together. So this is back to Mackay. Why Queensland? Queensland accounts for 95% of Australia's raw sugar production because it's really heavily reliant on sugar, these food technologies. And then the other thing they want to do up there is the biomass. So you actually crops such as sunflower, pongamia, king grass, jatropha, you know, so these different crops, they and the sugar cane. So they want to put this in so it can be used for biomass and bioenergy, so a fuel. Then they talk about, you know, land use. Competition for land will increase hand in hand with the increase in demand for these services. So when we need more and more of this land being used for these crops, it's going to be, you know, a competition between people who want it for agriculture and the traditionally, like traditional in terms of organic or permaculture or biodynamic food. And then we can see it's genetically modified crops to develop biofuels. And Bill Gates is the largest owner of farmland in America, and that's what
Understood.
he's going to use it for. So that has, and so again, it's plant synthetic biology innovation. So we're looking at then massive croplands that are just genetically altered, as well as food being made in this synthetic way. They talk about implanting tech within cows. So this is a virtual, so everything's a vert that they want a twin of everything, so a digital twin of everything. So here with these cows, they have technology implanted in the cow that can focus on the microbiome. And when the cow eats, you can see the microbiome. So you can see it in real time, what's happening in the microbiome of the cow. And then they can personalize antibiotics They can see into the tissue and all the signals through the whole being of the cow, and then they can use the software to change the cells and bacteria within the cow. And then they want to personalize milk, so make a model of the cow and use personalized information about a human, the heart rate, the blood pressure, and make the milk change within the cow. The milk that the cow is producing changes. And this is all this digital twin, so everything, you've got sensors over your whole farm, your whole food production, and you've actually got a replica in the digital world of your farm. And this is a platform, this is a partnership between Microsoft and CSIRO with agronomy, can't say it. So a lot of this is all about this AI, so more and more, you know, machinery and more techniques that are just AI. Okay, so a few key actors. There's a couple of the sustainable development goals. This all falls under number two, zero hunger. We need to do this to feed the world. You can hear that all the time with this synthetic food. And number 13 for climate action. So because we've got to save the climate, we have to go this way.
Let me listen to this. This is really
so. In 2020, the Food and Agricultural Organization,
the food industry,
United Nations,
signed a partnership
with CropLife to transform the global food systems. And CropLife is these guys, so Bayer, Monsanto, Syngenta, Corteva. They represent 85% of crop protection, which is chemicals, and 95% of crop biotech products. So it's really, really important. That partnership is really important. So I just want to show you some what the United Nations is talking about. So they're talking about food and climate change, healthy diets, plant-based meat and dairy substitutes, that's that precision fermentation, insect-based proteins, and cell meat. So that is what is healthy diet for a healthy planet. Transforming the food systems, that's another one, this is the United Nations. So again, there's so many reports, I won't go through them too much, but I just want you to show a bit of the scope of it. Then we've got this Food and Agricultural Organization framework. And they talk, so it's always under the global, the SDGs. So they're talking about having to transform it through this agri-food systems. They talk about nurturing the planet and building resilient livelihoods. They're talking about this technology I'm talking about, because I think most people would read that and think it's talking about something different. So that's the issue. So there's a growing recognition of digitalization and the so-called new technologies. CRISPR, synthetic biology, advances in food and medicine research. So the precision fermentation, the lab meat, it's actually the same way that they make pharmaceuticals. It's the same technology. Okay, and then, so it is the United Nations Specialized Agency in Food and Agriculture with a comprehensive mandate from its members to work globally. So that's Australia, we're a member of the United Nations. And you will see, I just wanted to point out the One Health model that they've got. So One Health, strengthened and better performing national, international, integrated One Health systems for human, animal, plant, and environmental health. So they're bringing it all together. So you can see where this becomes, everything can come under a biosecurity threat, including, and I will talk about biosecurity threats, and our food, our bodies. They do, you know, when you look at the biotech, they do talk about implanting tech in human bodies that can pick up if a virus and sends out an alert. So, and that's Bayer Monsanto, you know, platform talking about that. So this is part of the fourth industrial revolution, and that's from the World Economic Forum, they're the holders of that. It means that we are now merged, humans and machinery and tech is merged, like intrinsically merged, and it will change what it means to be human, is what they say. And the World Economic Forum is the 1,000 largest corporate entities in the world, and they have a partnership with the United Nations that formed in 2020 as well, I think. This is, if you're interested in what I'm talking about, you can go on Solari Report, and you have to sign up for a membership. I think it's like $20 or $30, but then you can download reports from there. So you can just sign up for a month, but there's a report on there about farmer food, and she talks a lot more in-depthly about it. She talks about the United Nations, this One Health model. Okay, so everything basically poses a potential biosecurity risk. We come down to Australia, CSIRO, reshaping Australian food systems. Again, we need to feed the planet. It's all under the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. They talk, I just want to note, they talk about the United Nations Food Systems Summit, which I think was 2021. I'll come back to that. They talk about it glowingly in their documents, and they want to transform our food systems so they're fit for the future. And they noticed, they're talking here about how they're going to have to bring in a lack of, there's a lack of consistency and certainty around sustainability and other metrics. So they're going to have to start measuring how sustainable agricultural practices are. And you've seen what they're talking about with sustainable. Future policy decisions are going to have to change. Tackling an interconnected set of long established practices, mindsets, values and incentives. So they're going to have to change the way we view food. And yeah, and then there's going to have to be new interventions and policy solutions within government. They're working on a national nutrition policy framework. And if you look at what they talk about this synthetic food being better for you than actual even organic food. Integrated data platforms to enable greater engagement. So they have to, and I will talk about how they, the tracking and tracing of all food. Okay, so then we've got the World Economic Forum, who I mentioned before, the 1,000 largest corporate entities. So they're very much into this biotech as well. Rockefeller, he put out like, well, they put out, the foundation put out mid-2020, a paper on Reset the Table. So in that, they are talking about bringing this food into schools for lunches. And, you know, so there's going to be more and more of this food. Australia Australia is talking about it as well. Modernized data and technology platforms, so you know, the tracking and tracing of food. And they're talking about an individualized diet, so people having and you can get a prescription from your doctor to get a sort of food package. So would it be potentially, you know, a bunch of things that you go home and put in your 3D printer that, you know, has your certain vitamins and mineral levels that you need? I think so. I actually think that's what it is. So they want to get into the schools with these foods, and then they want to expand food as medicine. Everyone to be on the internet, because increasingly that's where we're meant to be purchasing our food from, online. And that there is access, complete access to data through the whole food production system in real time, which means as it's happening, you know, from, they talk about from paddock, what do they do, from farm to fork. And it, this is the way they make it look pretty. So the Rockefeller Initiative, they've committed $100 million to further advance food as medicine, and $105 million plan to produce climate-friendly food. And this is this food as medicine idea. Then we have the plant-based food, fake meat company Impossible Foods, but I think that's just a plant one. I don't think that's, it's not a lab meat one. But this is, down the bottom, this is Bill Gates funded. And this is his message at COP, invest in innovations that save and improve the most lives. And this is where the private sector is coming really heavily into this, a lot of investment here. He talks about this climate resilient maize on the right, which looks so much nicer than the regular maize on the left. He's part of this organization called CGIAR, which is worth a look at. I didn't actually get time to do it, but I have looked at them in the past. But they partner with this organisation. I think they hold the seed stock. I think they're the ones who hold this massive seed stock. But there's a big story to that as well. They've been in Africa for a long time and meddling around in there. So they're going in, you know, with this actual climate. So it'll be sold as climate resistant. It's called climate smart technology.
Climate smart technology.
The COP28 Declaration on Sustainable Agriculture, Resilient Food Systems and Climate Action. So you know exactly what they're talking about. And this is all like Gates, Rockefeller, etc., you know, and other big players, of course. Okay, so I just want to go back to the Food Summit, because it's actually important to see what are the track records of these people, who's actually, you know, running the show here, and what's their track records. And because you have to really trust, if you're going to trust this synthetic biology takeover and the tracking and tracing of all our foods, you've got to really trust who's at the top. So our Australian government talks about this food summit as though it was fantastic, and this was in 2021, so it was meant to be all these groups from around the world coming together to talk about food at the UN sort of platform. And it ended up being massive big business in there, and farmers and like the organisations that represent Indigenous farmers and Small-scale farmers actually had to boycott it because it was just full of corporate interests. Corporate colonisation, small producers boycott the UN food system. So groups representing thousands of small-scale farmers and Indigenous communities, which produce 70% of the world's food through sustainable agriculture, are among those to withdraw, saying their knowledge and experience has been ignored. So some have criticised the prominence of corporations such as Nestlé, Tyson and Bayer in the summit's efforts to identify food system solutions. Fakhri and those boycotting the summit says the UN has given the private sector a dominant role in almost every part of the summit, which will lead to transnational corporations and their allies in the non-profit, and they also call themselves philanthropists, having greater scope to direct food policies. So again, Nestlé, Tyson, Bayer, International Fertiliser Association, they're the ones whose voices are being heard. And this is just another document talking about this. And if any of this really interests you, I can get your email and send you these slides so you've got the source links so you don't have to write it all down. Okay, so this is, so Gates, Rockefeller, Bayer, others, Corteva, they went into the Green Revolution in Africa, I think around 2008, and they revolutionized African farming systems, and the United Nations is a partner in this, and they talk about it, they virtue signal about it, they say it's been fantastic for Africans. It's actually been horrendous. They went in and patented seeds, took actual seed stocks off, you know, it's small-scale farmers, and then they've got those seeds now, and then they've forced onto them this sort of, you know, being having to really pay for things, you know, a corporate ownership level over it. So this is the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa. They represent more than 200 million farmers. This was a few years ago. They're pleading for people to stop funding. And then the multi-faith leaders wrote to Bill and Melinda Gates saying, please just get out of our, you know, like it. Fund us appropriately, invest appropriately, you have, you know, basically it's a mafia. So then we have the blockchain-based food supply chain management, which means everything is digitalized and has sensors on it, from the actual just what you're doing on the farm to how it gets from wherever it gets to wherever you sell it to the person who actually buys it. Everything is on a blockchain, which is a ledger, a digital ledger, and it's immutable. It just stays there, like, okay, here it is, here, there, and it's in real time, you know, tracking and tracing the food. The Australian Agricultural Traceability Alliance, and they talk about bolster transparency and trust. So it'll all be under trust. We need to know that our food's safe. We need to know it's made accordingly. It's good for the climate, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't have any diseases. So managing risks. Data collection tools can provide real-time measurements for process optimization and mitigate and minimize impacts of food safety crises and biosecurity incursions. Show you again, they're talking about synthetic biology when they're talking about this, and this, and again, extensive databases need to be created and food tracked, and an update on integrating blockchain from farm to fork. So that is definitely coming. It will look like this though. It won't look like we're going to track and trace your food. It'll be, you know, you can, through your mobile app, you can, you know, have a share and help and be a farmer. That's what they talk about, like this company. You can be a farmer and you can sort of buy a cow that's on somebody's property. And, you know, there'll be all these nice ways of making it look like it's nice. And people are really involved in the food systems. They know exactly where it's coming from. They know it's ethical. They know it's safe. The part of it, so there's a lot of talk about carbon. I'm just putting this in here. They are absolutely talking about your monitoring and tracking people's personal carbon allowances. So how much carbon you use, which if you use synthetic food, you will have a much lower carbon footprint than if you try to eat something that is organic and natural. Biosecurity threats. This is Dolphy, I can't remember, Banesh, who I worked with all last year and the year before when they were killing all the bees due to varroa mite. So that's what they did. Where is that? They just went in, got everyone's hives, poured petrol in it and taped it up like that and just left people with them. 40 million bees were killed in New South Wales. Okay, so just a bit of context, not saying this is only coming from here, but there was an MOU signed for a new era of One Health collaboration. So between the Food and Agricultural Organization, the World Organization for Animal Health, the United Nations Environment Program, and the World Health Organization signed a groundbreaking agreement a couple of years ago, in 2022, to strengthen cooperation to sustainably balance and optimize the health of humans, animals, plants, and the environment. So again, back to corporate ownership of corporate partnership with the United Nations and Bayer, Monsanto, et cetera, connected to the food and agricultural organisations. And it's a cooperation to combat health risks at the animal-human ecosystems interface. Sorry, I keep going the wrong way. Varroa, I just want to talk about Varroa mite because I spent a year fighting it, fighting what the government was doing. So mid-2022, it was found in Newcastle, and then they started to go out in 10-kilometre zones, red zones around, just killing everything within that 10-kilometre zone. Didn't matter if your bees had Varroa or not. And then that just kept going and increasing until 40 million bees were killed. I would say it's probably more than that. So it cost the beekeepers millions of dollars. So anyone on the small scale pretty much got wiped out. It also started to really affect crop pollination. And then they said 15 months later, oh, we can't contain it. Like no continent in the world's ever been able to contain it. They had a plan already and they put fipronil all through the environment as well, which is a chemical that's banned in a lot of other countries. So they put that down. So 15 months later, they said, oh no, we can't contain it. And then in an ABC article, late last year, it said, the DPI, the Department of Primary Industry, said, unfortunately, as it turned out with Newcastle, we now know it arrived 12 to 18 months before. That's the only reference. Like I fought this all year with Save the Bees Australia and some other people, Vast Permaculture and some other groups that were really upset about it. And that's the only reference to that they actually knew it had been here for 18 months prior, which meant they could never contain it. At the point they knew that, they knew that they could never contain it, even if they originally had thought for some bizarre reason that they'd be able to. And fipronil is being used and was being used. It's being reviewed by the APVMA, our pesticide body, since 2002 to see if it's safe. The review hasn't finished 21 years later, and they let it be used off-label, and it was going to potentially kill, well, it would have killed native bees and other insects and everything else. I'm furious about it. No, absolutely no. Nothing. And we really fought. We had a petition with 40,000 signatures. We got the Animal Justice Party, tabled it. We did a lot with everything that we could do, did huge amounts of talks on it. The government wouldn't even talk to me, you know, or talk to us about what happened. They just ignore you. So it's really, really disturbing. Now they want to put tech and sensors in beehives to be able to register if there's Varroa. So they're going to have, this is what they want. They want sensors on everything, basically. So that's their solution. And electromagnetic fields disrupt the pollination service. It really damages insects. So there's a real concern about that. This is just recently in America. So because of this chicken, what's it called? Like a chicken flu that's going around the world. Now, dairy farms have to have a biosecurity manager. They've just got a whole another list of things that they have to do, which are going to, again, knock the smaller ones out because they won't be able to afford to do it. Now we've got chickens kept in gardens will have to be registered. That's in England. That was last year, but now we've got New South Wales that if you sell any of your eggs, even if it's like a carton of it, you know, a little thing, you have to now register your hens. So these are all these by, and then what they're doing now in with the red fire ant up in Queensland, like just the lower part of Queensland and the northern New South Wales, they are poisoning everything. They're spraying actually with drones and overhead with helicopters. They're putting down a couple of poisons into the environment to kill every single last red fire ant. And it's on organic farms. It doesn't matter. They're going to do it six times, the same area, six times over in 2 years. So not only do you have what they did with the Varroa and fipronil there, then you've got six more rounds of fipronil, which again, other countries are banned. And there's another pesticide they're using, which is linked to, I think it's it's like some problems in babies. So they're putting this in childcare centers, you know, everyone's backyards, everywhere you go. No, they're putting it down even though it's raining. You're not allowed to put it down, it's raining, you're not meant to put it in creeks. You know, first-hand accounts of people are saying they're just spraying it everywhere. So this is what they can do under biosecurity. They can do whatever they want. And that's an article that I was part of, you know, to get some information out about fipronil. PVMA, which is the pesticides body who says yes or no, they're predominantly funded, like 95%, I think it is, by the chemical corporations that they are meant to regulate. So it's the same as the TGA. They've got the same issue where the ones they're meant to regulate are paying them. There was a report put out last year, I think it was, saying that the APVMA was captured by industry interests. So we know that a regulator is captured by industry interests. So now I'm coming just to my two concerns about it. Main ones, patents, that everything's going to be patented. What does that mean for our food sources? So big global biotech corporations like Bayer and Corteva are seeking to increase their control over the future of farming. So they're patenting all plant genetic information that can occur both naturally as a result of genetic modification. And you would all know that once something's patented, you've got to pay to use the seeds. You can't use them again. You can't, you know, you have to constantly pay. And Bayer Monsanto's had a few cases where just even their seeds have flown over and they've sued the next door neighbor's farm and they won. So again, it's the big guys. I don't know where I'm going. It's Corteva, it's Bayer Monsanto, etc. Okay, and then we've got, you know, they're coming into Africa with so it'll be climate smart seeds. So they're going into Africa with these seeds. This is just very good about, this is a really good article just talking about how distressing it is for the African small farmers about what's happened in their countries and how frightened they are that they're going to get put in jail. They've got like a 10-year potential jail sentence if they use or, you know, share seeds that are coming from the philanthropic organisations, the Gates and the, you know, ones who really care about the world. And this is just the CRISPR farmed animals bigger. So any time an animal's CRISPRed, they're going to be patented. So you're losing, you know, the precision fermentation, it's patented. You're losing the capacity for people to make their own food. And then there's the health, the lab-grown meat, they have to make the cells replicate and keep replicating, which is unnatural unless it's a cancerous state. So it's technically a precancerous state that the cells need to keep dividing. And there's just a lot of issues. It's highly synthetic, basically. Highly, you know, huge amounts of sodium, huge amounts of artificial vitamins, minerals, everything's artificial. So there's a lot of articles talking about that. It's also highly energy intensive. And yeah, so I'm going to finish up because I've done a lot, but basically, you know, there's FOE, the Friends of the Environment, have done quite a bit on the CRISPRing. I just wanted to talk about Bayer, you know, it's been in the news a lot because they've been sued a lot lately for, you know, Roundup causing cancer. So again, these are the guys who want to transform our food systems, and they are in the US at the moment. They're trying to get through a legislation so they can't be sued. CropLife can't be sued anymore. So that's in. I just also want to raise to your awareness that regenerative doesn't mean in this arena what we think it means. It doesn't mean regenerative farming practices. It means regenerative technology practices. So we've got the precision agriculture. It's all about technology, data-driven insights. And then we've got the remote sensing technology, so you use satellite imagery and the drones, and you have just everything in real time. You know, you're looking at things through your computer or your app on your phone. And then it's the Internet of Things, which links everything up together, all the sensors and devices to collect real-time data. AIs use data analytics. So it's not about people as farmers anymore. Knowing their properties, you're learning through your technology, and that's the model that's given. We've got India's leading agri-tech platform has joined forces with Bayer Crop Science, you know, to do all of this. So they're really moving in on these countries, India and Africa and other countries. And then it's all about this venture capital funding that's going into it by massive interests, which we also have in Australia. So this is the kind of, we can see it in Africa and the other countries like that, where it's the ugly side of it, but it's happening here, but it's just got a prettier bow on it. And I don't think people are aware enough that it's happening. So the World Economic Forum, regenerative agriculture, they're all about, and I kind of came across them talking about a year ago, and I was thinking regen agriculture, like, and I'm like, why are they so interested in regen agriculture? But now I get why. So this is another one, fifthworld.com, be part of the solution, regen technology. And we've got the Byron Bay-based $50 million climate tech fund seeks to save the world. So all the, so you know how it's a big regenerative farming area up there. Venture capital firm. Former, it's a lot of bankers in the arena, a lot of former bankers, and a lot of techies are in this arena. And so they're looking, this regen, they are into plant, you know, plant proteins, these synthetic plant proteins, and also plant the lab meats. So this is, even though they, you'd probably think that's a regenerative farming, this is the stuff they're actually into. So I think people, yeah, it's important to understand that. Actually finished. But the part of what they do is this part, this is going to become, I can see it in a number of ways, that if you're a farmer, the way you grow, you're going to have to account for how much carbon you're drawing down, your practices, because synthetic biology is seen as the better for the climate way. You will be, you know, given less points for doing it more traditionally, in a more traditional sense. They have the tracking and tracing of the whole food system to the consumer. So that's also going to impact on what consumers can buy. And then we've got things like this where you get rewarded if you buy sustainable food. So you get, you know, it's less expensive for you to buy sustainable synthetic food. So there's a number of ways I'm seeing this moving around. But when I started to look, I actually wanted to get a bit further than I was able to, because when you start looking, it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. It's a hugely in the regenerative farming space. I don't know if it's in the biodynamic space at this point in time, but it's really important to look. I want to sort of play, because there are so many investors in there. I want to understand what they're getting in return. I can see it's like at the moment it'll be a carrot. You know, we'll give you financing and we'll do this, and it will become more and more restrictive that you have to farm in a certain way. That's why I wanted to come, to raise awareness, because I don't know why. Even the big people in the regenerative farming that are talking just about traditional regenerative farming, they're not talking about this, and it's in their space, and I don't know what's going on. So I wanted to raise it so people are aware, so you don't go in incrementally and not know what it is. But thank you. That's it, pretty much. I did ask a Greens person the other day, and they said it's on their website. But I haven't looked at their website to see what they're, because I said, what do you think about synthetic food and GMOs? And they said it's on our website, but I didn't have time to look. I don't know, because I have gone to like food, well, I've been to one food place where everyone's talking about permaculture, and I raised all of this, and it was one politician there from Sydney, and I can't remember his name. But it's like no one's talking about this. And then when I said it, the politician said, oh, I am really concerned. I don't really like it. But then no one wants to talk to me. So it's like everyone just kind of doesn't want to know. Everyone wants this sort of nice story about what's happening, but not the real story of what's happening.
Hi. Was there some pushback internationally? I heard something in Italy. Where are there any countries you know of where they're pushing back against these kinds of things?
Yeah, Italy pushed back. And put through legislation about no lab meat, and that it would impact on their culture, their food culture. But I haven't looked into it too much, but I read somewhere and it's like, well, the EU could overturn that. So I don't know the legislative, how it works. So it won't really work long term, but they've tried, they've done what they can for their own country at this point in time. But this is the problem when you get bigger global bodies, it overrides your national sovereignty around what you do. I really don't see a lot of people talking about it, and I'm looking around. There's one organisation in Australia called Gene Ethics, and they've raised it, and Friends of the Earth were really vocal in 2019, and I think in Europe in 2020. They might still be vocal in Europe, but I've been in touch with them, and they don't have anyone working on that campaign anymore in Australia. So this is all going through without people's anyone having an eye on it.
Yeah, I really like what you've said. And yesterday Yuli said that anthroposophy started from a science base and then was transformed. And one of the things I found that, and just like Diane raised an issue, a lot of these rumours are spread and made up and then they're put down because they're not science based. I'm not saying it's true or not, but I'm just giving examples. And so we really, if we want to stop it, we really need to know both sides. And sometimes the one side is known and the other side isn't, and therefore you get crushed. And one of the things Steiner mentioned about our future was that we've got to become deal with the problems of the machine being integrated into the human being. So that's a challenge. He didn't give the solution to it, but it means we have to consciously do it. We can't just be emotional about it. And so it's kind of like, I sort of see, if you want to, you've got to be right in the heart working for those companies to stop those companies. Oh, it's take on all the science. And then, but I don't know. That's a picture that I've got. I don't know what your thoughts are on, you know, because you've done a great job in collating all the information.
Well, it's all quite specialised in a way. Like, I think that's kind of good because maybe people get really in their silos. And so I don't have the technical experience of it, but I can sort of try to piece the bigger global scope together. But when you look at these companies, there are a lot of younger people that are actually leading. Like they wouldn't be the actual founders mostly, but they're the face of it because it's all about getting youth involved in all of this. So they're the young, they think they're feeding the world and they think they're saving the climate. So they, I don't know how to help them understand there's another picture, you know, that is part of this.
In a sense, the genie is out of the bottle and this will happen. And it's a matter of small community groups getting together and protecting their food sources and doing the education, because it's too powerful, too much money involved in this. And you can take Africa as an example, where they bit back. India with the Green Revolution, when they flooded that country in the 70s with insecticides and herbicides. The farmers ended up drinking it because they couldn't afford to pay for it. It's been a slow build-up, which is now accelerated in the last, with the COVID rubbish that came out and the vaccinations. And these things are all interlinked, from the food to the medical and hospital. You know, it's all money. So from where I come from, we try to build small community organisations, growing food, making food available in the town. And I'd love you to come to our town and give a talk.
Yeah, I'd love to come.
We've got a big theatre there.
Fantastic.
I could probably get 100 people.
Yeah.
But we need more young people too. When I look around here, with all due respect, it's a lot of grey hair. And as you say, the young people are...
They're the
My
face.
Son
They're
is the
excited.
Same. My son says, look at this fantastic app. You can spot a cop 10 miles away and... You've got an app for this and an app for that, and I just blank out.
Yeah.
So they're too enamored with the technology, and what sustains human life is living life.
What I found most interesting, not most, but one of the interesting factors of your talk was the redefinition of vocabulary and terminology. And I've seen that a lot in the environmental movement. I remember there was when I was living in Victoria, there was an organisation, an environmental organisation we were part of, and dealing with one of the larger organisations. So they were trying to align their advocacy. And one of them was on the Murray River and the Murrumbidgee Rivers, and the river system, which was 20 years ago, full of salt, and it was with crisis. And then there was a crisis of interest in those river systems. And there was an actual campaign. And for no reason whatsoever, the next year, they'd taken everyone off those campaigns. There was no information about what was happening with those river systems. And 20 years later, that information on both those river systems are incredibly controlled. There's no way of getting public information in terms of any concerns out there. And the very few forums I've been to on those rivers where, you know, who owns the systems, what they're doing to it, every flow of those rivers is controlled digitally, and the Indigenous communities across those river systems are the last to be told about anything, and then they will hold a two-hour conference in a town where they know nobody can get to, and you'll have four people turning up across hundreds of square kilometres across the river system. But this is echoing the same sort of thing. It's like, oh, we've got this information available, and we've got all this terminology, and they're putting these marketing campaigns out, but the actual reality of when you seek it, or when you try to make it available, it's not really available. It's like an illusion.
It's a complete illusion. So I mean, I'm kind of new to understanding a lot of stuff. So I know a lot of people got more knowledge, you know, for decades, but from what I've read, that it was the 19, like pivotal was the Agenda 21, 1992 Rio conference, where people, Indigenous groups, were protesting because the answer was going to be, according to them, then biotech and technology. So that's, and there were lots of small groups that went and protested around where the UN was taking everything at that point in time. But I also, I agree with you, I get really incensed about the virtue signalling aspect of what's going on. I think they should at least be honest about what they're doing and say the full picture, and then people at least are aware of what's happening. I don't like that they're virtue signalling. It talks about we have philanthropists and partners ready to act, and our solutions will be nature-based solutions. So there's, and I'm not talking about nature-based solutions, but that's also ecosystem services where you value land based on the amount of fresh air it gives you. And Rockefeller was trying to get that on the stock market last year to start trading in the rights to nature. So you know what I mean? Like everything needs to be, everything needs to be questioned. Nothing is what it seems to be.
Well, with that terminology, what they we termed in those days greenwashing, now 20 odd years later, private water rights thing got through the UN. Water is not a vital, not vital to humanity, therefore it can be traded.
I haven't looked at water, but I know.
So yeah. All the countries then were able to trade water and sell it off.
No, is that how it happened?
Water rights.
The health minister, state health minister, got a suicide, death threats, I beg your pardon. And he resigned, and so did a lot of other connected ministers in the government. And then the wraps were put on it. We didn't hear anything.
Didn't they? Haven't they recently tried to put carbon capture and storage, the carbon into the Murray-Darling? There's something about the, oh no, that's a great artesian basin. Yeah, because that carbon, the carbon storage thing as well, like, you know, we got to get rid of the carbon. That's also like about collecting the carbon and putting it, you know, under pipelines underground and then storing it and polluting everything. So again, another thing that can't be taken on face value. When the poisoning was happening, I really, you know, fought the poisoning with the bees and the fipronil, and I went to the five biggest, and when the APVMA, the report came out that the APVMA was corporate captured, I went to Greenpeace and Conservation Society and I said, this is the perfect time to hit the APVMA, you know, and they just, only one came back to me and just said, we're focusing on electric vehicles. So there's just, yeah, there is a complete, yeah, something's definitely gone terribly wrong.
The environmental group has been captured.
Yeah.
Always has been.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about what Uli was talking about in terms of festive agriculture, and this sort of idea we were talking about in Tasmania of like acupuncture or homeopathics on place-based farms that can be relational, real with people, bring people to the farm to educate them, but it's also very tactical and real. It is not illusionary. It's very life based, so as a sort of strategy from biodynamics to kind of work together in that kind of acupuncture way across the planet with real reality and the right information.
Hi, sorry, thank you so much for that talk. It was incredible and equally terrifying. Thank you so much for doing this work. I'm curious about the thing that really scares me about this is what seems, especially from your talk, the very deliberate, systematic approach to trying to squash small farmers and people who are farming more traditionally or however you want to call it.
Yeah.
What I would have thought of as regenerative, but maybe we need to change that terminology now. I wonder, with the research that you've done, what are you seeing as the biggest challenges for people who do continue to want to farm in traditional ways when there's clearly these biosecurity, you know, corporate policies, government policies that are, seem to me, very deliberately trying to squeeze small producers like the bees from being able to continue? Like, is there, what have you found that we can kind of do to?
Well, I think, like, I found it very odd with the, you know, when they're killing all the bees and there's all these bee appreciation groups and nobody said anything, you know, like none of those bee appreciation and native bee appreciation groups said anything, even about the fipronil poisoning. So every time they do this, they couch it, which is what they're doing with the fire ant, They say, if we don't do this much sacrifice, it's going to be this much, and we have to do it for the common good. So then everyone gets silenced because they don't want any harm to come, or look like a person who's going to harm others, the community, because you'll get, you know, taken to with a pitchfork. So they do this same messaging over and over again, but it really does need to get to a point where when they start to kill all the bees, there was enough information out there that it had never been able to be contained. You know, there was just so many gaps in the story. And so one of it's like, we have to kind of get this messaging out about, you know, this global arena. So it's not just Australia. I think Australians are finding it very hard to realise that there's an actual global arena behind these things, and then looking at who are the funders. And I don't think a lot of people do that. So I don't know, that's first is the biosecurity stuff, and how do we make people aware so they don't just keep complying? Like, they are pushing back about the red fire ant. There are, you know, groups that are pushing back and filming things because they're watching the government, the people that come around and do things they're not allowed to do. And, you know, New South Wales, you don't have to say yes to it. So people need to stop saying yes, especially when they don't have to say yes. So there's all of that. We have to sort of, there's an education layer there as to what this is, you know, potentially about. So that's one way of the small farmers. I just feel like, I mean, I do buy from Regenerative Farmer, and I'm on the Central Coast, so we've got a lovely little cafe, Mark. I can get all my, most stuff I need from there, from about 6 or 7 stalls from Kalinara area. So I'm just going to keep supporting them, and I want more and more people to know this. So people just directly go pay cash, or, you know, and actually really keep these guys in business, because the one I buy from, who's only got 25 acres, they're squeezing them. Like, they're squeezing them. It's getting harder to keep it viable. So the more we can actually just support them directly, the better. Yeah, and then I guess it's just educating people, hopefully.
There's a blockchain week coming up next month in Sydney. No doubt all these issues will be looked upon, but there's also a women's group for blockchain that are meeting up. I can send you the details, because as you know, blockchain is permeated to this whole thing.
Yeah. Blockchain, it's a digital ledger. Basically every single, so it's with food, it's like, this is what happens on the farm, it'd be the data that's being collected, and it's like, just think of it as a block in a chain. It's like this little bit, that little bit, and it stays there, so you can check it, you know, this whole real-time data that's being collected from everything. But they want to blockchain all of us. They want from birth certificate, birth, the first baby was born on the blockchain. So it has the mother's health when she was pregnant on there. It has that child's baby's birth details, their, you know, and then it would go on, keep collecting stuff, their mental health records, their physical health records, their schooling, their, you know, it traces you through your whole life. And there's a whole market behind that, but I'm not talking about that. Social impact bonds. They're making markets off these children to bet on them and put them in certain programs. So that's another really... So impact investing is actually really massive, and that's a part I need to understand more. How is this being funded? Who's really behind the, you know, who's really at the top funding through? And then what are they getting in return for now? You know, is it the carbon credits, or what are they getting when they do the funding?
Exactly what you were talking about, like a dystopian version of like post CRISPR gene snipping and synthetic food and the after effect of that. And it's terrifying. Mm. And yeah, your talk just makes me realize that we're so much closer to that than I realized.
Like, I think we've been talking about it for a long time. Like, I think it's back in documents from the 1930s and stuff, from different people envisaging that we'll be doing, you know, you'll be able to get milk without having a cow and stuff, you know.
I'm not an expert in anthroposophic thinking, but Steiner, he was a critiquer. Like, he talked, there was one quote I remember reading saying, he was talking about things growing from, we need to have, I don't know what the word was, something growing from the materialistic grave of what things are. Mm. And the way that you are, your practice, what you're doing, you're critical, you're analyzing the situation. You can see the words, they're fake words. Regenerative, it's a beautiful.
Yeah, you think,
but it's not, it's their story. Medicine, food is medicine. Like in food systems, local food systems, regenerative food systems design, which I'm involved in, I use food as medicine. Mm-hmm. And so they're co-opting. Yeah. And so in the Steiner education and in all education, we need that critique, that head, that analysis, But we also need to have the joy and the heart and the praxis as well. And we just need to have that holistic approach and the hands. We need our hands as well. So it's but you have a particular praxis which we need to understand what you do, and then that needs to be taught in schools, whatever you're doing.
It was interesting what you said about that the young CEOs who are running the organisations, they actually believe what they're doing.
They do. I believe
that. And that's a thing we have to sort of work against. But one of the things Steiner mentioned, again, he said, look, all these things, he was predicting a lot of things to happen, and we're not going to be happy with them, and you're presenting a lot of these things, but he said without spiritual science, without the looking at the spiritual beings behind whatever the forces that are working, there'll be no other solution. It won't work, because you can talk, and you know what you get when you start talking normal language with people, they'll just turn a blank eye, a lot of them. So unless we are able to, and I don't know the answer for it.
So what does he say, unless we're able to what?
Unless spiritual science is behind it, we actually know. It doesn't mean that, you know, I don't come up to a person and say, oh, there's an Ahriman behind it, you know, the negative being. Mm. One sort of actually has one's awareness of the spiritual forces oneself that are behind these people who feel enamored by this wonderful work that they are doing. They're saving the world. And they honestly believe they're saving the world, and they're in the majority.
Yep.
But in a sense, they're working to a kind of a destruction in a reality. And one's got to see behind it the forces. But unless we're able to speak their language and get into, I mean, I'm only giving an opinion because I'm not quite sure what the solution is. But unless one actually is able to speak from their perspective, understand it, but then counter it.